Hey there, Elizabeth.
Hey, Sheila. So we've been friends for what, nearly 14 years now?
I think about that. Yeah, although we've been really good friends for about half of that, but that's kind of a part of our story, isn't it?
It is. Well, at least for now, we're really good friends in large part because we've learned to be honest with each other. But it's not always perfect. Nevertheless, we're learning a lot by being imperfectly honest and thought you might too.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved. Hey there.
Hey, so Sheila and I have been talking because we both live solo by choice. And there's a lot of judgments that, speaking for myself, that I've made about myself because I've made that choice. And I've also overcome a lot of judgments from other people in making the decision to live alone. And so we thought it might be an interesting topic for today. Again, speaking for myself, I've really had to have some honest conversations with my parents, with my former husband. So,
Yeah.
Sheila, do you want to maybe walk through your thought process on both how much of living alone is circumstantial versus a choice for you and what your current thinking is about it?
Sure. Yeah. And actually, to put it in context, because I've been thinking about it since we decided we wanted to talk about this, I spent pretty close to the first 51 years of my life not living alone because I lived with my parents, obviously, was in college with people. I lived with roommates after that. I lived with my husband and my kids. Even following the divorce, which was over 20 years ago, we shared custody. And so the kids, we lived a half a mile away. So I would never have considered that time in my life that I was living alone, even though I had a lot more alone time than I had had in my previous years. But ever since I moved after that, and that's been since 2007, then yes, I have lived alone and I have made that choice purposefully, and I've enjoyed it. I'm interested in hearing your perspectives on how you've had to have the conversations with, as you said, your parents. And I mean, there's so many different issues in your situation that aren't in mine, but I feel as if because of the trajectory of my life, it's more expected that I would be in this position than you would. I'm kind of curious how that's kind of unfolded for you.
Yeah, sure. Well, I would say just to start, I never really thought living alone was really an option. I grew up in a Midwestern town, and most everyone I knew lived in a traditional family. And I was taught to feel sorry for people who lived alone. If someone's wife died or if someone had recently been divorced, then I was taught to reach out to them to invite them to come over for dinner and things like it was a charitable thing to do. And it never occurred to me that someone would actually choose to live that way.
Yeah, no, I actually, that's kind of understandable. I can't say I didn't have that same mindset for quite a lot of my life.
Yeah, and I took my first trip by myself when I was maybe 25. My grandmother had a condo in Florida, and I went to go stay there by myself. And I was there for 6 days, and I was really nervous about it going into it. I felt like I was going to be bored and lonely, and I found that it was the exact opposite. I found that it just opened up all this time for me to be creative and for me to do things on my schedule to, you know, just as one example, family dinners were a really big thing in my family. And we pretty much had dinner as a family together every night, which meant that I needed to eat when my family was ready to eat. And it meant that I needed to eat what they wanted to eat. And I can remember being so hungry by the time that we would get to dinner, and I would totally overeat. And that was just always really hard for me. And when I had the opportunity to actually eat what I wanted to eat when I wanted to eat it, it was like revolutionary for me.
I agree. For me, that's one of the biggest perks. It's whatever I want to eat, whenever I want to eat it, and in whatever manner I want to eat it, and nobody ate it before me.
Right. Yeah. And my mother is just somebody who was born to be a mother. She loves nurturing and taking care of people and doing nice things for people. And I just, in all honesty, am not really wired that way. And so when I had the opportunity to clean up after myself and no one else, and to buy my own groceries and not buy anybody else's groceries and all of that, it was sort of the first time in my life. And I was actually married at the time when I took this first trip, but my husband grew up with a single mom who worked a couple different jobs and was very busy and trying to make ends meet. And he became very independent. I joke that it's maybe the best gift that she ever gave me was that he was extremely independent. So it's not like I really had to do a lot to take care of my husband, but I don't get that sense of gratification from that. So I just kind of figured out that I enjoyed being solo. And, you know, went back after that week and resumed my normal marriage and didn't think that much of it. And then 3 years ago, we decided to build a home in Montana, and my husband rented an apartment to live near the home to oversee the building of it. And I was in Colorado. And with that and a couple other random circumstances, we spent a good part of 3 years living solo.
Okay.
And I figured out that I really liked it.
Well, but this was without the perception by others also that you were living solo, because you really were living in two different homes based on your circumstances. So that's an interesting piece.
It's, it's part of that. I started living in my parents' basement while our house was being built. I was pretty self-contained in the basement. And when I say their basement, it's not like a dingy, dark basement. It's two bedrooms.
You gotta say that river. For your mom.
It walks out to a river in Vail, Colorado. I mean, it's pretty cushy living. But anyhow, I'm pretty self-contained in that I have a little kitchen and have everything that I need downstairs. And I figured out I love being outdoors. And so I like being outdoors during the day when it's nice to be outdoors. And then I like working at night. And that's typically when I would be sitting down to dinner and to social time. And when I was living with my parents, I would just sort of retreat to my basement after skiing or doing something outdoors to work for the night. And they thought that I was being antisocial. And as I've shared before, I had been struggling with OCD since the onset of the pandemic, and it kind of coincided with that. And so they were attributing my wanting to be in the basement to my OCD. And, you know, my mom said a few things like, well, I can't wait till you can really get a handle on this OCD, because then you can come hang out with us upstairs. And I had to say, like, I love you and I like spending time with you, but I like being downstairs by myself.
Right. You were doing it a little bit maybe because of the OCD, but your preference was to do exactly what you were doing.
And, you know, I've sort of been felt abnormal since I was a little kid, just because I've liked different things than the people that I grew up with. But one of the things that I would characterize as being abnormal about myself is that I am just not that social in the evenings. I'm very social during the day and like to, you know, ski with people and hike with people and all that, and really have a huge network of friends and spend a fair amount of time doing social things. But if given the chance to be home and work or write or just kind of do some things in solitude after 5 p.m. or to go out and be with friends elsewhere, I typically choose to be solo after about 5 p.m.
And I'm similar. I want to interject a little bit because I'm wondering, do you feel like it's just a time thing, or is it just you also enjoy having the ability to make that decision whenever time it is in the day that, I'm going to spend a huge block by myself and there is no one else you have to be beholden to or explain to who's there or who is expecting you to do something differently than that. And so that's, you know, that's part of it, I think.
I think it's both. Just as an example, I had some things that sort of threw me off my normal schedule last Friday. I was feeling just very energized. I wanted to get a bunch of things off my checklist to do around the house and stuff like that. So I'm, you know, vacuuming and doing all these random things around the house at like 8 o'clock at night on a Friday. And I was thinking, wow, this feels really good and is exactly what I want to be doing. And if someone else was living here, I'm sure they would be annoyed that I didn't want to go do something on a Friday night outside of the house. And if we were inside, if I was vacuuming around them while they were trying to watch Netflix, that probably wouldn't have gone over very well.
Yeah. Again, in addition to that food thing that we talked about a little while ago, that is, in my opinion, one of the other major perks is that you also don't have to adjust the way you're feeling, your energy levels, exactly what you want to do to accommodate the fact that you're in someone else's space and you have to acknowledge how they want to share that space at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's hard because when you started out and you said, I'm just not that social. And I think I made a little bit of a noise. Maybe I didn't, because I view you as a very social person in my opinion.
Yeah.
Being social can exhibit itself in so many different ways. I mean, I feel you're being social when you're doing what you just described, like getting a lot of stuff done, because usually what you're doing is reaching out to people or you're creating something that you want other people to see. So that's kind of being social. It's just not the normal mold. When you picture I'm a social person, you picture somebody who likes to go out and party or go to dinner with people or be in meetups or go to a book club. At least that's my perception of how we've kind of been indoctrinated to think of almost an extrovert versus an introvert. But I don't know. Are we getting off in the weeds here?
Not too bad, but
okay.
But yeah. No, I think that's right. I think for me, it's that I don't like to be social conventionally. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather be in a deep conversation like this with someone that I have a strong relationship with, or someone that I'm even meeting for the first time and I just kind of want to know who they are as a person. I'd rather be in a conversation like that than at a cocktail party with small talk with several different people.
Yeah. And again, I think it's all intertwined in kind of the same concept that we're kind of dancing around here. People's different ideas about the things that we seem to have established one definition for, one size fits all, as we started out saying, living alone. And you kind of gave what you've always perceived as what we're supposed to think about people living alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know when we've talked about this, I was kind of asking, is it the concept of living alone that would be a good thing to discuss, or is it the concept of what alone means? Feeling lonely, that's kind of what I thought. There's kind of, I don't think they're that different, but maybe they are. This is what came to mind when I was trying to grapple with that whole thing about feeling lonely. So I described that the first time I really lived alone was after all my kids were gone. And then that's when I moved to Boulder, Colorado in 2007. And I didn't know anybody. I didn't have a job. I moved into a basement apartment, which was a very nice basement apartment. And there wasn't even anybody upstairs because the woman I was renting it from was a clothing designer who worked in Bali for 6 months out of the year, and she was gone. Mm-hmm. And so if I looked at that, I would say, oh my gosh, I'm on a freight train. I'm headed right into lonely land here. And I have to say, I did not feel it at all. And I think back and I think because I felt like I had control over it. I wanted to be where I was. I wanted to be doing what I was doing, looking for a job, but other things. And I knew I had control over the amount of time I would be spending alone and the amount of time I wouldn't. And that's played out. I mean, I volunteered, I formed connections with people when I wanted to. And so it really wasn't a lonely time. Whereas there have been other times in my life where I've had more people surrounding me that have been far more lonely than that.
Are there other times when you've been living alone that you've felt lonely?
Oh, I'm not even going to say in Boulder, I never felt lonely. It just wasn't an overwhelming concept that I was afraid it was going to be. I think everybody can admit the pandemic kind of really brought it out in us. And I think part of that is because what I just described a minute ago, I felt like I had control over doing all these things that would alleviate my loneliness. We did not have that control anymore. We were kind of stuck. And it's a concept. That's why I feel like all of this, even though living alone is an actual thing, it's a situation, it's not in somebody's mind. But I think the concept of loneliness is very much in somebody's mind. You can kind of get imprisoned by it a little bit, especially when you're in a situation like a pandemic. So through the course of, the last, 15, 16 years, there have been, and it goes up and down also depending on the other things that are occurring in my life, how lonely I am. And the last thing I want to say, because I've really done a lot of thinking about this, for me, if I know I'm in people I care about's thoughts, then I feel so much less lonely. And the way I can feel that the most is when they get in touch with me, just because they want to get in touch with me to talk or reach out, whatever. Mm. And that's why the way I've established things with family and friends, even in a large part, is I wait for them. I don't establish, let's meet. Let's have a phone thing at this time. Or, my children are not instructed. They have to contact mom every week or do stuff like that. I'd rather just have them when it's a time they want to kind of talk, and they'll call. And for me, it's like an added bonus because I feel like they do want to talk to me at this point. It's not, I'm calling them. They're picking up the phone. They're like, okay, I'll talk to her. Depending on that kind of a situation going on, that certainly can control my loneliness feelings.
Well, this whole thing about control is interesting because I was living with my husband during the pandemic, and lockdown was the most time that we had spent together ever, which is true for most people, but particularly for us, it was the most time that we had spent in the same geographic location in a couple years. I actually was really grateful that we had that time together. You know, on a normal basis, I would not have wanted that much together time, but it was a scary time. And because I knew that I wouldn't otherwise be able to have human connection, I was really glad that he was there.
Yeah. During the pandemic, I have moved a lot of different places, 5 different states in the last 15 years. And even in those states, I've moved a few times. I sound like I'm constantly on the move, but during the pandemic, I was living in yet another basement apartment. But, well, it was more of a first floor because it was a walkout, whatever, in my daughter-in-law and son's home. So they were above me. And they were both very busy, even during the pandemic. It was a very separate unit, just like you have with your parents, where you don't see each other. And we very much respected each other's privacy. And so that's kind of the way it played out. But just the fact that they were up there and that, you know, occasionally I could hear them walking or a little bit of a scent, it alleviated so much stress in me that I think would have existed in me if I had, the apartment I had before was at a big apartment building and I really didn't know anybody. And it would have been a totally different pandemic experience for me. You know, just even looking out and seeing their car in the back, it was like, okay, they're home.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's different a little, you know, I know it's different than with you and your husband, but a little bit the same.
Yeah. I noticed that with my parents too, just hearing that they're upstairs for some reason that provides less loneliness. But also going back to what we were talking about regarding the control, the most lonely I've ever felt living by myself. Well, most lonely, period, but specifically living by myself, because I haven't actually felt that lonely living by myself, was when I actually got COVID. So I was living in Big Sky. We bought a condo there and I was living there. And it was when we first bought the condo. So I really didn't know any of my neighbors or have any friends there. And I got COVID and I needed to be in isolation. I've never felt more lonely in my life, but I think it was mostly because I just had this total lack of control of being able to leave and meet people.
Yep.
And I felt like if something happened to me, I didn't have a support system where somebody would help out.
Yeah, the health thing can really ramp it up a lot in terms of that kind of anxiety and the loneliness. So it's funny because what you just said kind of is similar to another thought as I was thinking about this conversation we're having, something that I think is kind of along the same lines of what I'm trying to say about control and being alone and loneliness, et cetera. Being in a relationship can sometimes make someone feel like they're in a room and they really like the room. It's a comfortable room. They love the decorations. They love the heat, the cool, whatever. There's lots of food, the beds, everything is wonderful. They have a ton of things to do, ton of things to watch on Netflix and all this kind of stuff. And they're sitting there, and then all of a sudden, they hear somebody lock the door. And that can make them have their thoughts turn only to, how do I get out of here?
Yeah.
And so I, you know, it's a little bit along the same lines, but not completely along the same lines, but it is something, your head does it to you.
Well, do you feel that you've been judged or you judge yourself about your choice to live alone?
I'm not quite sure. I mean, I've probably had judgment around other decisions that are probably tied into it. You know, for example, getting divorced, it was my choice. The living alone that came as an after effect of it. I'm not quite sure I can separate out just the concept of living alone versus choosing that kind of a path for my life. I don't know. I probably have felt very differently even since I was a young adult in terms of that kind of thing, in terms of my perceptions of other people feeling like people who lived alone, it was like I had to feel sorry for them. Mm-hmm. I agree with you that that's kind of the way our society makes you kind of think you should feel, but I don't know that I've ever felt that way. So I probably haven't felt that judgment or anything because inside of myself, I don't have it. Mm. I view it as being self-sufficient, which, you know, it's just one tiny piece of it. I understand. I guess I'd have to say no to that one. Mm.
I definitely have some judgments about myself about,
but again, isn't it kind of in a little ways similar in that it's tied into other things? Like you're alone because your marriage is ending.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would say the judgments that I have about myself is that I feel like I'm inflexible. I'm set in my ways. I buy into the judgment that I'm antisocial. And I've been doing a lot of thinking about, you know, whether I ever want to live with someone again. Mm-hmm. And I had this conversation yesterday with this guy. He's in his late 50s and he's been married twice and he just broke up a 3.5 year relationship. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why they decided to part ways was that they couldn't quite agree on what their ideal living situation should mm-hmm. be. And he said for the first time in his life, he really thought about the concept of living in separate places. And he said that he wasn't sure that in this particular relationship that that would even work because she was so set in her ways. And I had this thought of, oh my gosh, I might become that person. I used to think that having joined townhomes would be my ideal scenario. Mm-hmm. So you could each have your own space, but then you could spontaneously mm-hmm. spend time together. And I think that that's the closest thing that I can imagine about my ideal scenario, but I really don't know.
The adjoining townhomes is good, except then you have the sight line. So right. I think having a living situation that's as almost as close, if possible, without knowing the movements at any given time of the day of the other person. Are there lights on? Are they home? Is their car in front of their house? Even though you're a couple and you're living separately, and that's going to come into it then. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, if you lived in an apartment building on separate floors, that wouldn't come into it.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. I want to just double back a little bit, because when you said you were feeling like you were kind of like the woman that you just described that the person you had the conversation with broke up with, that she was too rigid, were you saying that he didn't even think having separate places would even work because she's too rigid, or she's so rigid in needing to have somebody living with her?
Well, in all honesty, I'm not totally sure, because we were hiking and you could hear the highway and I'm not sure I heard him. And so I want to just beef up front about that in case this person listens to this. But what I thought I heard was that she's so set in her ways that even, you know, being in her space sometimes was going to be too much. And I think the reason why I heard that is because that is my fear. Okay. That I'm not actually even going to be able to be in any relationship, right, because I'm going to become so set in my ways if I keep living by myself.
Right. Interesting perspective, because again, coming back to me, because of course it always has to come back to me. I'm just making a joke here. I lived a lot of the adult part of my life because I was raising kids, accommodating the needs. Like, that was my life. It wasn't what you just described. Like, I had no choice. Like, even when I got divorced, as I said, I mean, the door was always open. We shared custody, but it wasn't like I was going to say to my kids, this is not my day, go away. Like, so I saw them almost every day. So, and I loved it. And that was good. It wasn't like I'm saying, oh, and the whole time it was like such a burden on me. But having said that, I reveled in it. I enjoyed it, but I can't tell you how much I enjoy not having that now. So you don't set something and then it's just always written in stone. You go through stages in your life where it's just what you need and it feeds you, and then you move on. And I think if you're in a place where you meet somebody, whatever, I'm looking ahead here, and there are certain things about it that are so appealing, the compromises you'd have to make wouldn't feel like compromises.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you'd have to move in together, et cetera. That would be maybe a bridge too far. That would be a lot. But any relationship, there has to be some compromising, because no two people are going to have a mindset that they're always going to agree on the exact amount of right time to spend together at the exact same time and exactly what to do. And I also am not in a relationship and haven't been for a while. So I guess I relish that extra freedom also, because it doesn't make me feel lonely, getting back to that, to not have that.
We've talked about some of the challenges in finding a relationship, but if you could eliminate those challenges and you could be in a relationship, would you want to be?
It would have to, kind of like what you were just saying a little while ago, I think it would have to be a kind of relationship where I'm not quite sure how much I'd be compromising in it. And so then it would, and that's maybe why I came to that conclusion in talking to you about it. It would have to then depend on who this relationship was with, on how far I'm willing to kind of go back to that part of me that compromises and accommodates. We've talked about this in other areas, issues. I know that I have difficulty asserting myself in that way. Mm-hmm. If I am in something with somebody, I want to please. I'm a people pleaser. And so that enters into it too, because it's almost like my personality forces me to do it. And so if I don't have somebody, then there's nobody that I have to please. I mean, it sounds really weird. I understand, but it works for me right now. It does.
It doesn't sound weird to me, for whatever it's worth.
Well, that's probably why we get along so well.
So we talked a little bit about the concept of what it means to be alone. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting things that I heard lately is that they did a study about loneliness, because our Surgeon General thinks that loneliness is our most important national
It's a public health emergency. Right. Yeah.
And they found that being in a relationship isn't actually the most important determining factor as to whether people feel lonely. And so that just kind of got me thinking about what it means to feel alone. And you talked about this a little bit in the earlier part of this episode, but how do you think about that question?
Well, it's hard. It's hard to answer that question. It's hard to judge. I kind of agree. I mean, it can vary with the person and it can vary with the circumstances. So there are people who go through their whole lives being enormously lonely, and they're in a 75-year marriage.
Yeah.
So it just comes down to it. We are really all wired differently. And I'm not quite sure our culture accepts that. It's kind of like created a cookie cutter way of life. We're getting better, certainly, a lot better. But I don't know that we're there yet, especially in terms of relationships and women's roles and all of that kind of stuff. I think we have a ways to go in that.
Yeah, I agree.
So, I mean, maybe you're experiencing some of that as a newly living alone woman.
There might be some truth to that, but I also often wonder how much of my judgment toward myself is because of my head trash about that. So just as one example, when I first got married, I felt like it was my job to make cookies for my husband. My husband never told me that was my job. I just decided, self-assigned, that that was my job. And I figured out that I hated making cookies. And I felt really badly about myself because of that, because I felt like I should be someone who wants to make cookies for their husband. And that was all gender roles.
And you know, how our growing up definitely leaves an indelible mark. What we see is modeled for us, whether it should be or not. So I imagine your mom baked cookies.
Yeah. And my mom, she's not a cook. Cookies were her thing for many lovely reasons.
There you go. So there you go.
So that's exactly where that came from.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure that there's definitely some of that, but, you know, I learned a lot about loneliness, both through my experience of living alone a lot the last couple of years, but also through the pandemic. And I think I always told myself the story that spending more time by myself was the way that I would, quote unquote, speed up. You know, if I needed to catch up on schoolwork, I would go to a coffee shop to get out of the dorm when I was in college so that I could move through stuff quickly. And many analogies like that through my life. There becomes a point when I lose motivation, I lose inspiration, I start to feel too much anxiety when I've spent too much time by myself. And it's just one example. I've been working through a lot of injuries lately. And one of the reasons why I've allowed them to persist is because I've told myself that physical therapy is time consuming and it slows me down, and working out with a personal trainer versus by myself is more time consuming because I'm a former fitness instructor. I know how to train in a gym. And when I add that extra layer of meeting with a trainer, then I felt like it was slowing me down. So anyhow, I had this experience the other day that I was just really feeling pressed for time. I had an appointment with a physical therapist who's also like a strength and conditioning coach. And I didn't want to go. And I finally talked myself into going. And I was so glad that I did, because I was just feeling sort of uninspired and like I was going through all the motions to get things off my list, but it just felt hard and it felt like I was moving more slowly than I would like. And I had been spending a fair amount of time by myself. And I went to that appointment and had that human interaction. We had a lovely conversation. And the rest of the afternoon, I felt like I was just about 30% faster in everything that I did than I was in the morning.
Yeah, so, no, that's what makes it difficult. Because for all I'm saying about how, and I do enjoy living alone and all of the perks that come with it, I do recognize that I can get into that kind of rut that you just described, where I think it's what I want. And I think it's what's best for me. And I think it's what will make me feel really good and better if I don't have to exert myself and do that, as you say, sometimes it's a social thing, whatever. And then if it's push comes to shove and I just have to, most of the time, because it's not that I'm scheduling that much stuff, I really did need it. So, I mean, that's the upside of living with somebody. If you're in a really good relationship and you help each other and you value each other's personalities and you want to support each other, it can really be such a positive in terms of helping you figure out what it is that will help you reach your potential, essentially, and even not feel lonely. But it's hard.
You said something earlier that gave me a thought. You talked about being in the line of sight someone and and so when we were talking about this before, I shared that one of the things that I like most about living alone is that I can be my quirky self doing really weird. I'm not doing bizarre things at home. I'm trying to think of one small example. Like, all right, this morning I went to go swim at 6:30 AM and I was in a hurry to get out of the house to do that. And I left my half eaten breakfast on the coffee table. And, you know, my husband was a pretty tolerant person, but I never really felt great about leaving half-eaten breakfast on the counter when I was living with someone else.
Right.
And it felt kind of good to leave it there and to know that I'd pick it up when I got back. And to just be able to be your own quirky self and move at your own pace and at your own times without someone asking about it or commenting about it and judging. And I think maybe that's what you were getting to with the line of sight. Is that right?
Yeah, it's actually line of sight was actually the word that I would, because they could just look out their window. So that's what I meant. But something, a very similar word, oversight. It's a word that's popped into my head occasionally when I consider this issue. It's so nice not having the oversight.
Yeah.
You know, even if there's no comments, like you just know somebody's, you know, you're really eating that pasta out of that bowl with your fingers, which I would never do if I live with somebody because they might want to eat some of it. So I'm just going to address that issue. I'm very hygienic. I would never do that, but I do it when I live alone because it's just me.
Yeah.
Oh,
but I had the thought that I wonder if it would be possible to actually be in a relationship that you could cohabitate or be in the line of sight of each other, but not have that judgment. So like, for instance, I actually feel like through all these conversations that we've had, that I could be in the same space with you and not judge you for eating pasta out of a bowl.
As long as you didn't have to eat that pasta too.
I would, you know, that could just be your pasta and I wouldn't feel any judgment about it.
Right. And so here's the kicker. The other person may actually not be feeling the judgment or whatever, but I think we're kind of wired to feel that way anyway. Because if we've ever been judged by anybody that we've lived with, it sticks in us.
Mm-hmm.
So for everything, you know, I mean, if you're growing up and you're constantly berated for leaving a mess or leaving, you know, you can't break that pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I'm getting into psychology. that's not my forte. So, but it's somewhat all related. And that's why I think the issue of, is it better to live alone or not live alone? There's no answer, clearly. But I agree with you. We started out with this point. I wish the default wasn't, it's much better to live with somebody. And I think that's where we still are in our society.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And I'm glad that you said they kind of drilled down a little bit in the Surgeon General's report to some extent by maybe saying it doesn't necessarily have to be that you have a relationship, but I do wish if they're going to declare loneliness a public health emergency that they might try to make better efforts to define what loneliness means first.
Yeah. And just quickly, in case anyone fact checks this. So I'm not sure that point was actually in the Surgeon General's report.
Okay.
I heard it in conjunction with a conversation about that report. It may have been a different study, but
so we always have to have disclaimers at the end of every post. Say disclaimer, any of the information we've shared, don't take it to the bank.
Good.
I mean, our hearts are in the right place, but we're not researchers in terms of that's what this podcast is about. So we're just having a conversation. but we don't want the Surgeon General to get pissed at us.
So yeah, I definitely don't want that. You mentioned that it would be nice to be in the same zip code at some point, which I also share that sentiment. I guess I just want to honestly out that I feel excited about that and also a little bit nervous about that.
I
was thinking about maybe seeing if you wanted to come to Florida or if it would make sense for me to come visit you or something. And I guess what I feel excited about is that I've been loving our conversations, and I think a lot of times conversations are better in person. And it would be nice to maybe even go on a walk, like we started our friendships with our walk and talks. That would be fun to do again. And I feel nervous because...
Oh, I do too.
Okay. Well, I'd be curious to hear why.
I'll just echo that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'd be curious to hear why. I would say for me, I feel nervous because I feel that you have a higher capacity for conversation than I do. I get tired more quickly, and I'm nervous about hurting your feelings if we're together, if I say, this was a great conversation and now I'm done.
Right. And could you go into that room and not let me see your face?
Yeah.
See, that's the thing, you know, I mean, I said that just because it's been so long and, you know, it's like, it would be nice if we could figure something out, but I completely understand what you're saying, because I still think, as with any visit, it can change a dynamic between people if you don't find the right synergy.
Yeah.
And you might not get it back. And so that's, yeah, I can't say that I'm not a little nervous. So we'll figure it out.
Would you be willing to share why you're nervous?
So here's the thing. I would be nervous that you would not tell me that you needed. No, because if you told me, I think we could figure it out. And it would be probably more you saying, you know, I'm exhausted, whatever. So I think that's part of it. I don't think I would have the intuitiveness to do it and to then say, okay, let's stop right now, because I would be thinking maybe she doesn't want to stop. And that's my personality too, taking the lead and doing that, you know, not taking the lead, letting other people. So I guess that's kind of all in there. I haven't really fully formed it in my head, but.
It might be an interesting experiment and totally being honest.
I know. We could actually do a podcast while we're in the throes of it. And yeah. And then we'll just come to blows and that'll be the end of it.
Well, it'd make for good reality TV if nothing else, then if that happened.
Yeah. No, I like to kid. So there. But no, I that's interesting. It's an interesting thing to think about.
All right. Well, topic for another day.
For sure.
I feel complete today. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Nope. I'm good. I think I've kind of, you know, even gotten the weeds there for a little bit. So yeah.
All right. Well, until next time.
Okay.
Bye, Elizabeth.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. Note that, notwithstanding that any of the guests on this podcast may be licensed professionals, no one on this podcast is providing or seeking to provide the listeners of this podcast with any medical or health services. You should not rely on the information or content presented during this podcast, and you should not make any health or medical related decision based in whole or in part on such information. Consult a healthcare professional licensed in your state for all matters relating to your health, and do not disregard any medical advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment provided by your healthcare professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests, and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved.